Chapter 11. My pulse raced. My face went cold. But I realized, in that moment, that I wasn't afraid. I'd always worried that I would be. I talked big. I pretended like a champ. But how many fights had I actually been in? One or two scuffles with other kids when I was younger? Some sparring machos in judo classes? A part of me had always worried that when I got into the sky, I'd panic. That I'd prove myself to be the coward everyone claimed I was. Like the lies said my dad had been. But with a calm and steady hand, I eased up on the throttle and pulled into a turn, trying to position myself behind the enemy. I knew dogfighting techniques. I knew them backward and forward. I'd drawn them out in the margins of basically every set of notes I'd taken in class, regardless of the subject. I was still hopeless. I made the curve way too wide, and Hurl nearly smashed into me because we had banked at different times. "Wow," Hurl said as the two of us recovered. "This is harder than it seems, eh?" The Krell ship chose Jorgen to attack, letting out a blast of glowing destructor fire. I tried to help, but my turn was too sharp this time. Jorgen, Ned, and the Krell ship all zipped away behind me in a sequence of dogfighting maneuvers. I blushed, feeling useless. I'd always assumed I'd just, well, take to this naturally. But I struggled to get my ship even pointed in the right direction. The Krell pulled into position again behind Jerkface, who cursed softly and then did a near-perfect twin-S dodge. Suddenly all of this became so much more real to me. That was one of my flightmates, and the enemy was doing its best to kill him.
"Nice work, Jorgen," Cobb said, "but be careful with those maneuvers in the future. If you fly too much better than your companions, the Krell will immediately target you. If they can identify flight leaders, they attack them first."
"Shouldn't they attack the weakest pilots first?" FM asked. "The easiest to kill." But that wasn't the way the Krell thought. They always targeted the best pilots they could find, in an attempt to destroy our chain of command.
"I'll explain later," Cobb said, voice tense. "Ned, you need to stick closer to Jorgen if you can. Make the Krell have to worry about you tailing it if it tries to tail him."
It was fortunate the Krell focused on good pilots, because Hurl and I would have made easy target practice. We could barely steer. Jerkface, though, he performed a perfect Alstrom loop, almost losing the Krell ship. Unfortunately, Jerkface's neck spin wasn't as masterful. He performed it well, but when he pulled out of it, he ended up accidentally pointed toward the rest of the flight. I heard him curse over the radio as he tried to swerve, but that sent shots from the pursuing enemy ship right into our team. They scattered, ships twisting in all directions. Bim clipped Morningtide, the quiet girl with the tattoos. Their ships bounced away from each other, but didn't hit anyone else. A few destructor blasts hit Rig's ship full on, but his shield held. He still screamed over the radio as the flashes of light rocked his poco. I gritted my teeth, heart thumping as Hurl and I managed, finally, to head in the right direction. But that meant we passed among the scattering ships, and I nearly collided with Bim this time. Scud. I understood the Admiral's reasoning, but there was no way we should be up here fighting. At this rate, the only funeral pyres burned today would be our own. Poor Kimmelin had leaned on her altitude controls and had retreated some 500 feet below us. Jerkface barely kept ahead of the Krell, though he'd long since outpaced Ned. I pushed the throttle forward, and my ship compensated briefly for the G-forces, but after a few seconds they hit me, pushing me back in the seat, making me feel heavier.
"Where are those reinforcements?" Jerkface said, as the enemy fired on him, blasting at his shield. "Any moment now," Cobb said.
"I may not have a moment," Jorgen said. "I'm going to try to get the ship to follow me up high so the AA guns can shoot it. Radio them."
"Done," Cobb said. "The Krell ship's shield is still up, so you might have to keep it in AA gun range long enough for the gunners to score several hits."
"Okay, I'll try.
What's this red flashing light on my dash?"
"Your shield is down," Cobb said softly.
I can save him, I thought, desperate. I have to save him. The two had gained a lot of altitude. My only hope was to get there fast, to tail the Krell ship and shoot it down. So I pointed my ship's nose up and slammed my throttle forward, hitting overburn. The G-force crushed me downward as I flew up, and I felt myself grow heavier. It was the strangest sensation, far different from what I'd imagined. I could feel my skin pulling down, like it was going to slide off my face, and my arms grew heavy, making it difficult to steer. Worse, a wave of nausea hit me as my stomach was pulled downward. Within seconds, I started to black out. No. I was forced to grab the throttle and pull it back, slowing my ship. I barely managed to keep from losing consciousness. Below, the massive AA guns that protected Alta began firing, but they seemed clunky and slow compared to the zipping fighters. Explosions blasted the air behind Jorgen's little Poco and the strange, unfinished Krell ship. In a burst of light, an AA gun hit the Krell, breaking its shield, but it kept flying, right on Jorgen's tail. There was no way its next shot would miss him. No. At that moment, a single beam of pure light shot upward from below and pierced the Krell ship right through the center. It blasted apart in a flash of fire and debris. Jorgen let out a long sigh.
Thank the reinforcements for me, Cobb. That wasn't them, son, Cobb said.
Oh, Kimmelin said. Did I get it? I got it! Oh, are you okay, Jerkface?
I frowned, looking down. That had been a shot from Kimmelin. She'd positioned herself lower and over to the side, not to escape, but to get a good shot at the enemy without having to fire through the rest of us. I was, quite frankly, stunned. Jorgen sounded like he shared the emotion.
Scud, he said. Quirk, did you just snipe a Krell fighter from long range?
Cobb chuckled over the radio.
Guess the file is right on you, Quirk.
It's, she began, but then sighed. Never mind. Quirk it is. Anyway, yes, sir.
What is this?
Jorgen asked.
She's the daughter of AA gunners from Bountiful Cavern, Cobb said. Historically, people with good accuracy on the smaller AA guns tend to make good pilots. The rotating seats in the small AA guns accustom one to moving and firing, and young Quirk here has some very impressive accuracy numbers.
I wasn't even going to take the pilot's test, to be honest, she said in a conspiratorial tone. But the DDF recruiter showed up and asked me for a demonstration, so I had no choice but to give it to them straight. The best modesty is shown while bragging, as the saint said. And after they told me I might be able to do it, well, I'll admit I did get a tad excited by the idea.
Suddenly, her place among us made sense.
Vocal sound off, Jorgen said, sounding shaken. Status report, starting with anyone wounded.
Riggs said. I got hit.
How hurt are you?
Just shaken, Riggs said, though I threw up in my ship.
Hurl laughed hard at that.
Rigmarole, return to base, Jorgen said immediately. Morningtide, provide him with an escort. Everyone else into line.
We obeyed, now far more reserved. The banter died off as we watched the firefight in the distance, but soon our replacements came up around us and spelled us off. Cobb ordered us back to base, and we accompanied the other cadet flight that had been used as fake reinforcements. We landed near Riggs and Morningtide's ships. The two of them had already left, perhaps to take Riggs somewhere to sit and calm down. He could get rattled easily. I'd have to find him and see if he needed someone to talk to. As we climbed out of the ships, Hurl let out a whoop of excitement and ran for Kimmelin.
Your first kill! If you hit Ace before you're done with flight school, I'll Hurl.
Kimmelin obviously didn't know what to do with the praise, as the rest of us gathered around, holding helmets and congratulating her. Even Jerkface gave her a nod and a raised fist of acclaim. I edged my way to him. That had been some awesome flying. Hey, Jerkface, I started. He spun on me and practically snarled.
You, we need to talk, cadet. You are in serious need of an attitude adjustment.
What? Right when I was going to compliment him?
Coincidentally, I snapped, you are in serious need of a face adjustment.
Is this how it's going to be? You insist on being a problem? Where did you get that flight suit anyway? I thought robbing corpses was illegal.
Scud. He might have pulled off some awesome flight work, but that face, I still just wanted to punch him. You watch yourself, I said, wishing I had something to stand on to bring my eyes level with his. When you are broken and mourning your fall from grace, I will consume your shadow in my own and laugh at your misery.
You are a weird little girl, Spin.
Little girl? Little girl?
Attention! Cobb shouted, limping up to our gathering.
Little girl?
I seethed, but remembering how I'd been chewed out earlier, managed to keep my temper in check as I fell into line with the others. I pointedly did not look at Jerkface.
That, Cobb said, was somehow the most embarrassing and inspiring display I've ever seen out of cadets. You should be ashamed and proud. Grab your packs from our training room, then meet me in Epsilon Hall of the Flight School building for bunk assignments. You all need to hose down and grub up.
The other cadets rushed off. I tried to linger, to ask after Rig, but Cobb ordered me on ahead. Seemed he didn't like people waiting for him while he limped. I still trailed after the others, feeling, well, like Cobb had said, actually, both ashamed and proud. I'd flown. I'd been in a battle. I was in the Defiant Defense Force. At the same time, my performance had been awful. For all my bragging and preparations, I'd been more of a liability than an asset. I had a lot of work to do. And I would do it. I'd learn. I was a warrior, as Gran-Gran had taught me. And the warrior's way was not to run from failure, but to own up to it and do better. As we walked down the building's hallways, the PA system cracked on.
Today's flight was an incredible victory, Admiral Ironside said. Proof of defiant strength and tenacity. Remember what you fight for. Remember that if the enemy manages to get a lifebuster bomb into range, they can not only destroy this base, but everyone below and everything we love. You are the line between civilization and madness. In particular, I'd like to acknowledge the new cadets of the as-of-yet-unnamed Cadet Flights B and C. Their first sortie proves that they, with possible exceptions, are a group to be admired.
With possible exceptions. Scud. How could the admiral of the entire DDF be so petty? We walked to the classroom, where we'd left the packs of clothing we'd brought to Alta. As I swung my pack onto my shoulder, it banged into Hurl. The athletic girl laughed and made a wisecrack about how she'd almost crashed into me earlier, and I smiled. She seemed pumped up rather than discouraged by our performance. As we walked toward the hallways with the cadet bunks, Hurl hung back with me so I wouldn't have to walk alone. Ahead, the others laughed at something Ned said, and I decided I wouldn't let Ironsides get to me. I had my flight as my allies, and they seemed, Jerkface accepted, to be decent people. Maybe here, for the first time, I'd find a place where I would fit in. We reached the cadet bunks, two hallways with rooms all along them, one hallway for the guys and a separate one for the girls. Everyone knew that there were strict no-romance rules during flight school. No funny business was allowed until after graduation. Who had time for that anyway? Though I had to admit, Bim did look pretty good in a flight suit. I liked the blue hair, too. We went with the boys to check on Rig. Their room was almost as small as the one I shared with Mom and Gran-Gran back in Igneous. The small chamber had a stacked-up set of two beds on each wall. Arturo, Ned, and Jerkface had plaques on their beds, and Rig was already in the fourth one. A cot had been pulled in for Bim, poor guy. Rig was sleeping, well, probably pretending to, but that meant he wanted to be alone for now. So the girls and I walked back to our hall. We located the room assigned to us, and it was just as small and cramped. It had four beds like the boys' room, and each had a plaque saying who was to bunk there. Kimmelin, Hurl, FM, and Morningtide, listed by their real names.
but I preferred to think of them by their call signs. Except maybe Kimmelin. Did she really want to be known as Quirk? I'd have to talk to her about it. Regardless, at the moment, I was distracted by something else. There was no bed or plaque for me. Not even a cot.
Well, that's unfortunate, Kimmelin said. Guess you ended up with the cot, Spin, once they bring it. I'll switch off with you every second night if you want.
That girl was way too nice to be in the military. So where was my cot? I looked down the hallway and saw Cobb limping up. Two men in military police uniforms stopped in the hall behind him, then lingered, not advancing on us, but also conspicuously waiting. I trailed up to Cobb, leaving the others in the room. Sir?
I tried. They won't listen.
He grimaced.
No bunk for you. No meals in the mess hall.
What? I couldn't have heard him right.
You are allowed in my classroom. I get ultimate say over that. But the rest of the DDF disagrees with what I've done. I have no authority over the facilities, and they've decided not to allocate resources to you. You can train, you can, fortunately, fly a POCO. But that's it. I'm sorry.
I felt my face grow cold, anger rising inside me. How am I supposed to fly if I can't even eat?
You'll have to take meals down in Igneous, he said, where your family requisition chits will work. You'll need to take the elevators down each night, and then back up in the morning.
The elevators can take hours, I said. I'll spend all my free time commuting. How am I supposed to be a member of the flight if I can't live with the others? This is...
Outrageous, Cobb said, meeting my eyes. Agreed. Will you give up then?
I took a deep breath, then shook my head.
Good girl. I'll tell the others you were denied a bunk because of some stupid internal politics.
He glanced at the MPs.
Those cheerful fellows will show you the way out of the complex. And make sure you don't sleep on the street.
He leaned in.
It's just another fight, Spin. I warned you. They won't make this easy. I'll watch for a chance to fix this. Until then, stay strong.
Then he hobbled away. I slumped against the wall, feeling like someone had cut my legs off. I'm never going to belong, I realized. The Admiral will make sure of it. The MPs took Cobb's departure as their cue to approach. I'm going, I said, shouldering my pack and walking toward the exit. They trailed behind. I wanted to say goodbye to the others, but I didn't want to explain, so I just left. I'd answer the questions in the morning. Suddenly, I felt exhausted. Don't let them see you bend, I thought, walking straight backed. The MPs escorted me out of the building, and down one hallway we passed, I was fairly certain I spotted Ironsides watching to see that I left. Once I was outside flight school, though, the soldiers left me. So much for making sure I didn't sleep on the street. Maybe that was exactly what Ironsides wanted. If I could get arrested for loitering, she might be able to have me kicked out of the DDF. I found myself pacing outside the building, not quite wanting to leave, not wanting to abandon the others and the sense of camaraderie I'd been imagining. Alone. Somehow, I was still alone.
I just can't stand it, Cobb,
a voice said nearby. Was that Jerkface? I inched closer to the building and looked around the corner. It was the back entrance to the school. And indeed, there was Jerkface standing near the doorway, talking to Cobb, who stood inside. Jerkface threw his hands up.
How can I be flight leader if they don't respect me? How can I give orders when they call me that? I have to beat it out of them somehow, forbid it, order them to obey. Son, Cobb said, you don't know much about the military, do you? I've been training for this my whole life. Then you should know. Respect doesn't come with a patch or a pin. It comes from experience and time. As for the name, it started to stick. So you've got two valid options. Ignore it, roll with it, and hope it goes away. Or embrace it and accept it, to take away the sting. I won't do that. It's insubordinate.
I shook my head,
What a terrible leader.
Kid, Cobb began.
Jerkface folded his arms. I have to get home. I'm expected for the formal dinner with the ambassador from Highway Cavern at 1900.
Jerkface walked out to an extremely nice-looking vehicle on the street. A private hover car with its own small acclivity ring? I'd seen them occasionally down below. Jerkface climbed into the vehicle and started it up. The engine purred, somehow more primal than the smooth power of a booster.
Scud, I thought. How rich is this guy?
His family must have tons of merits to afford something like that. And that left him too rich to bunk with the others, it seemed. He pulled away in a smooth motion. It seemed distinctly unfair that the thing I was denied, he tossed aside like it was a bad bite of rat meat. I shouldered my pack, then trudged off. I left through the gate in the walled DDF compound, where another set of MPs marked my passing on a notepad. Then I trudged down the wide street toward the elevators. My neighborhood was at the far edge of Igneous, so I really would spend hours and hours commuting this way. Maybe I could find some place to stay nearer the elevators below. It still made me feel sick. I walked to the elevator complex, but there were long lines, probably because of the problems they'd been having earlier. I braced myself for a wait, but then turned and looked to my left, beyond the buildings, beyond the fields. Though Altabase itself had a shield and wall, this improvised town, full of farmers who were defiant in another way, didn't have a fence. And why would it need one? The only things out there were dust, rocks, and caverns. A thought took me. It wasn't far. I stepped out of the line to the elevators and walked outward, past the buildings, past the crops. Farmers working there glanced at me, but didn't say anything as I left the town behind. This was my real home. The caverns, the rocks, and the open sky. I'd spent more time here since Father's death than I had down in Igneous. It was about a 30-minute walk to the cavern with the crashed ship, but I found my way without too much trouble. The opening was smaller than I remembered, but I had my light line and was able to lower myself. The old ship looked more broken down than I remembered. Perhaps it was because I'd just flown something new. Still, the cockpit was comfortable, and the seat reclined all the way. It was a stupid idea. If debris fell above, I could get caught in a cave-in. But I was too hurt, too wrung out, and too numb to care. So it was that, lying in the improvised bunk of a forgotten ship, I drifted off to sleep.